The title of the address today is Do Things Go Bump in the Night? And I have written down here that, of course, you don't have to believe anything I say from this pulpit, me or anyone else, but just maybe keep an open mind and we could have a chat about this over coffee. All over the world, people have created festivals to commemorate their dead ancestors. And there is a remarkable similarity between these celebrations. In ancient Rome, the tradition was that the extended family gathered annually at the family tomb and had a picnic meal in the presence of the ancestors. And I was chatting to a Filipino nurse there last week, and she was saying in her community, they erect a marquee in the cemetery 1 week at this time of the year, and people bring food to share. It's sort of a potluck food festival. Everyone gathers, the people pray, they put candles on the grave, and the children pray or play around the graves. It's a day-long celebration. And of course, there are festivals in other places, Korea, China, Mexico, and of course, Ireland. Samhain is the Celtic time to remember the dead. That's a time of magic, of horror, of pranks. And it was believed that if the ancestors did not get due honor, their living relatives would be paid the price for neglecting them. As with all important festivals, Samhain was Christianized as the Feast of All Souls, and then on the 1st of November, the Feast of All Saints. And these Catholic festivals are not very important. What is a big celebration within Catholic parishes, particularly in rural Ireland, is Graveyard Sunday. People gather in the graveyard to recite the rosary together. In my hometown, the whole town is a traffic jam on Graveyard Sunday because people who have long moved away return to visit the graveyards. My brother is a very nominal Catholic. It's minimalist, really. But he will attend three different graveyards on the day because family members are buried there. Now, some of the family members are great-great-grandparents. He would never have known them, but he feels that connection. The ancient roots of the festival, the commonality, and the fact that they endure are an indication that this touch something in our psyche that's needed. 19th century emigration from Ireland exported Halloween to America. So not only did Ireland export Halloween to the world, it was Irishman Bram Stoker who created the ever-popular Dracula. And of course, all November, all these Dracula films are rehashed. Ireland is in the top destinations for ghost hunting, and Discover Ireland have a list of the top most haunted houses in Ireland on their website. I was amazed to see that Fogue Williams was talking about her belief in haunted houses and was involved in a program. This is one of those numerous television programs that claim to investigate reports of haunting. And these programs really annoy me, because they're always filmed in the dark. They're going to examine something scientifically, but let's do it in the dark where no one can see anything. And the whole thing, I've never watched any of them completely, but it just seems to consist of people in the dark, and they shout at each other, "Where are you? Where are you? Did you see that? Did you hear that? Did you hear that? What was it?" Turn the lights on if you want to see what it was. Of course, the great mystery of life is what happens when we take our final breath. Does some part of us survive physical death? Is it possible to have contact with someone who has died? Do spirits come back to contact the living? As a community who prized the use of reason, many Unitarians will answer all of those questions with a very firm no. But to those who believe that, I would say, try and keep an open mind. Or as one Unitarian person said to me, I'm open to the possibility to being surprised. We're told in Christian teaching that what happens after death is that there is heaven or hell for eternity. Some of us in the Christian tradition were given the third possibility of, or more likely, a probability of a stint in purgatory. Those concepts of up in heaven plucking harp strings or down in hell being tormented by devils are from the dark ages. They're past their sell-by dates. I don't think anyone believes them now. But there are other explanations of what might happen when we die. For example, reincarnation. Indian philosophies say that we are born and reborn until the ultimate attainment of unity with God. It's called moksha in the Hindu tradition and nirvana in the Buddhist tradition. Nirvana is not being reborn again. And these concepts are not familiar to us. But I think they're an awful lot more reasonable to accept than that you go to heaven or hell or that it's just annihilation. And when we might reject the idea of being born and reborn, you know, someone said, to be born once is just amazing. Why not have it repeated? And when you think of those Hindu philosophies, remember the story of the Buddha that told about the Buddha. An excited student came to the Buddha to say he could fly, and the Buddha said, so too can a gnat. People skilled in meditation develop capabilities our reasoning mind does not have. And it's important to remember that those capabilities are not magic, they're not mumbo jumbo, they are a skill that is practiced over many years. People in the Reformed religions are rooted in Enlightenment thinking, and that's based on science. I believe what I can see, what I can feel, what I can touch. Remember that science didn't stop in the 19th century. It is continuing to develop. One of the things that was on the news last week is that one of the telescopes they've sent up has discovered a spongy planet. And they're saying, now we're going to have to rethink the Big Bang theory. If this spongy planet exists, it doesn't fit with that theory. What's the explanation? We don't know it all yet. And modern physics contradicts some of that reasoning that Unitarians are so attached to. Just look at the pulpit here. We all agree that's solid, it's carved of stone. I see it, I feel it, I touch it. You can see it, feel it, and touch it. But modern physics says that it's not solid matter. There are spaces within that stone. That wasn't known in the 19th century in Western world. It was in these Eastern philosophies. Modern physics also says that everything is connected. And that's what the Indians knew for thousands, for generations. They knew that everything in the world was connected. Hinduism says that humans are spiritual beings having a physical experience at this moment. We're not just blood and bones and sinew. Again, physics confirms that energy cannot be destroyed. It becomes a different form of energy. So we have to ask, what becomes of my energy when I die? Do the dead come back to contact their loved ones or to haunt them? Is it possible for us to contact the dead? Well, I think when we go to these questions, we go on to very shaky ground. Firstly, I say there are unscrupulous people who prey on people who are grieving. And it is incredibly easy for them to do that. It's very easy to make an educated guess about why a person is consulting a psychic. Most of them will be middle-aged women, maybe when a parent dies. And, you know, oh, I'm getting somebody, they're coming through. Is it your mother or your father? I'm not sure. Is it my? And the person says, oh, it's my mother, because they came to hear something about their mother. It's very easy to give away why you are there. And people do prey on it. There are charlatans around. However, I would always say to you that countless millions practice meditation and most will never be able to fly. Doesn't mean that there's some people who can't do it. There are some people. I think that sometimes it is possible to tune into the spirit world. Or more correctly, I think that the spirit world can tune into our world. Like this morning's reading, I think in that tuning in, the dead speak to us, to our hearts, more intimately and more clearly. And that can never be proved, but when a person feels it, they feel it. But how can we be sure it's not imagination? And of course we can't. But those who are experiencing that touch of the heart, it is real, it feels different. And only because I am on the road towards retirement, I'm going to share my ghost story with you. And this is an experience I had. It was when Bill retired and we were searching for a new minister. And a minister came from the UK. He was interested in taking the pulpit here, and we were interested in him. And it was in September, and he was coming over for a visit and going to take the service on Sunday. And there was a wedding during the week, and I said to him, maybe you'd like to come along and sit in and watch the wedding ceremony. So he thought that would be lovely, and he said, look, let's meet for a coffee beforehand. And I went to meet him for the coffee, and he didn't turn up. And that was time for me to prepare for the wedding, so I totally forgot about him. And when you're getting ready for a wedding, you have to be very focused because you're thinking of what the bride wants and her mother and his mother, whatever else, 100 things buzzing in your head. So he was totally forgotten by me. And there was a big wedding, and a lot of guests were coming up the stairs towards me. And one man, whom I mistook as a wedding guest, put out his hand and shook my hand. And just then I realized, oh, it's him, he's here. He said, I forgot, I got stuck in traffic and I'm very sorry I'm late. And just as our hands touched, I saw a figure to the side. It was a young man dressed in soldier's uniform. He was tall, thin, and he had dark hair. And the figure said to me, this man will never be the minister in Dublin. And I thought, that's interesting. It's something that we'll see the truth of in time. And I did share this with Paul, and we waited to see. And that process with him contacting us, being interested in the job, went on from September until December, when he withdrew from the process. So my ghostly apparition was right. And he never did become the minister in Dublin. Later on, through other circumstances, if anyone wants me to tell them at tea break, I'm happy to, I realised, or I've come to know, that it was one of the two Faulkner boys that I saw the image of. Can I contact the dead? Absolutely not. I can't do it at will. But sometimes I think they can tune into us. And I don't think that ghosts come to frighten us or to harm us. If you think about it, most human beings are kindly men. They mean kindly. They are capable of doing nasty things, but there's generally something else that makes them nasty. It's very, very rarely a person is purely nasty for the sake of it. And I think at this stage, the ghosts come to help us, to comfort us, just to be there. Do things go bump in the night? I don't think so. I don't think there are any ghosts going around throwing things around the house just to make us upset. I do think there might be a upset teenager in the house if that is happening. And if things go bump in your house and you don't have an upset teenager, the best thing to do is to turn the light on and see who's playing the prank. So that's my ghost story. I'd be curious if anyone would like to share one at coffee. And I don't think things go bump in the night, but I do think the energy of people does continue after they die.